The Secret Teachings of All Ages, an Adult Brain Summary Edition by Manly P. Hall. An Adult Brain audiobook production read to you by Graham Dunlop. Preface to Summary Edition. For nearly a century, Manly P. Hall's The Secret Teachings of All Ages has stood as the most comprehensive compendium of esoteric philosophy ever written. An encyclopedia of the ancient wisdom that shaped civilization, religion, science, and the occult arts. Yet its vast scope and archaic style have long placed it beyond the reach of modern readers. This special Adult Brain Summary Edition restores Hall's masterpiece in a distilled, accessible form, preserving his original language and brilliance while reducing its volume by nearly 90%. The result is a concise yet faithful companion to the original, capturing the essence of Hall's lifelong quest to unveil the hidden architecture of truth behind myth, religion, and philosophy. Here, in vivid and enduring prose, are the mysteries of Egypt and Greece, the symbolism of alchemy and Kabbalah, the teachings of Hermes, Pythagoras, and Plato, and the secret threads linking the world's faiths and philosophies into one radiant whole. The abridgment remains true to Hall's spirit, reverent toward the wisdom of the ancients, skeptical of modern materialism, and unwavering in its conviction that man's true evolution is spiritual, not mechanical. Prepared and published by Adult Brain Publishing, this edition honors Hall's original vision, to awaken within every reader the spark of the eternal seeker. It is both an introduction to one of the greatest esoteric works ever written, and an invitation to rediscover what the ancients called the light of the ages. Introduction. Philosophy is the science of values, the measure of superiority among all things. It seeks what remains when all that is secondary is stripped away, establishing the relation between the visible world and its invisible cause. It has been called many things. The science of divine and human matters, of effects by causes, of sufficient reasons, of truths both sensible and abstract, of the absolute and of the unity between the ideal and the real. Philosophy is commonly divided into six branches: metaphysics, logic, ethics, psychology, epistemology, and aesthetics. Plato called it the greatest gift of the gods, yet in modern times it has become fragmented, burdened with systems and arguments that obscure its higher purpose. The lofty wisdom of the old academy has been adulterated by opinion and materialism. Laplace could write an entire cosmology without reference to God and think the omission sufficient. Bacon noted that a little philosophy inclines the mind to atheism, but depth in philosophy brings it back to religion. Aristotle began his metaphysics with the declaration that all men naturally desire to know, and so the mind of man has searched both the depths of the self and the reaches of the cosmos for the link between the one and the all, the effect and the cause, the illusion and the reality. An ancient philosopher said that he who knows only common things is a brute among men, he who knows human affairs is a man among brutes, and he who knows by intellectual energy is a god among men. Thus, man's rank is determined by the quality of his thought. The enslaved mind is little better than the beast, but the mind elevated toward divine realities partakes of the light of reason. Cicero called philosophy's life's guide, the discoverer of virtue and the expeller of vice. Yet now the word has little meaning but without a qualifying term, for it has splintered into countless isms, each refuting the others while neglecting divine order and human destiny. Philosophy should have been the stabilizing force in thought, keeping man from folly, but philosophers themselves have obscured its path through excessive speculation. Still, the great systems of old remain a record of man's highest reasoning. Greek philosophy began with the seven sages: Thales, Solon, Kelon, Pittacus, Bias, Cleobulus, Periander. Thales taught that water was the primal substance on which the earth floated. His successors differed. Anaximander named infinity the first principle. Anaximenes called it air. Anaxagoras declared it to be an infinite, self-moving mind that brought order from chaos. Archelaus described mind and air as the dual principles of all things. Heraclitus taught that all is change, fire both the origin and the end of the world, its soul and exhalation of vapor. From these early speculations arose the atomic theory. Leucippus and Democritus declared that the universe consists of atoms and vacuum, both infinite, the atoms varying in form and size, combining to form all bodies. Even the soul, they said, was atomic and perished with the body. Later, others traced this teaching back to the Pythagorean monad. In modern times, Dr. Edwin D. Babbitt envisioned the atom as a minute but organized structure, its orderly groupings forming the basis of matter. Pythagoras of Samos made mathematics the sacred key to divine truth and founded a brotherhood to pursue wisdom through number, geometry, music, and astronomy. His followers practiced silence and contemplation, believing that harmony governed the cosmos and that even the stars moved in musical proportion. He and Empedocles taught the transmigration of souls. Archytas declared pleasure to be a pestilence opposing reason, for virtue was the balance of the mind. Xenophanes of Elea opposed the fables of Homer and Hesiod, teaching that God is one, eternal, incorporeal, and all-seeing. His disciple Parmenides held that reason alone, not the senses, reveals truth, that the universe is one and immovable. Melissus and Zeno denied motion and vacuum alike, declaring the cosmos to be a divine whole. Leucippus proposed a universe of fullness and void, its fragments forming worlds through agitation, and Democritus expanded this into a complete atomic philosophy. Socrates, the great questioner, refused to impose doctrine, preferring to awaken each man's own understanding. He taught that the soul existed before the body, possessed all knowledge, and was stupefied by the flesh until recollection restored its vision. Philosophy, he said, is the way of happiness, its aims the contemplation of God and the freeing of the soul from the senses. He held that God, matter, and ideas are the principles of all things. Of God, he said, "What he is, I know not. What he is not, I know." Wisdom, to him, was the sum of virtue. He lived and taught that all places were fit for learning, for the world itself is a school of virtue. His followers, among them Xenophon and Crito, spread his influence even as Aristophanes mocked him in the clouds. Socrates stood calmly, letting the crowd judge the truth behind the parody. His disciples gave rise to later schools, the Elean, Eritrean, and the Megarian. Phaedo of Elis, once a slave, was freed by Socrates and founded his own school. Menedemus, who succeeded him, claimed freedom from opinion and argued that only affirmative doctrines were true. Euclid of Megara, another of Socrates' disciples, risked death to study in Athens disguised as a woman. His school taught that virtue is wisdom, that good is unity, and that evil, being the absence of good, has no real existence. Plato, born Aristocles, fulfilled Socrates' dream of the swan of wisdom. Sold once into slavery, he rose to become the greatest interpreter of divine truth through reason. Philosophy, then, is man's search for the link between the seen and the unseen. From Thales' water to Pythagoras' numbers, from Socrates' questioning to Plato's illumination, it charts the ascent of thought from ignorance to wisdom, from beast to man, from man to God. Philosophy in the Megarian line turned on rigorous dialectic. Euclid's heirs, Eubulides, with pupils like Alexinus and Apollonius Cronus, Euphantus, the tragedian, and Diodorus, pursued paradox to its limit. Legend says Diodorus died of grief when Stilpo, then master of the school, posed questions he could not answer on the instant. He argued that motion is impossible, since a thing would have to be both where it is and where it is not. The cynics, from Antisthenes and his greater exemplar Diogenes, advanced an austere individualism. Few needs, rude shelter, coarse food, virtue as self-sufficiency, and conversation with one's own nature. Diogenes taught that all belongs to the wise. Friends share all, the gods befriend the wise. so the wise own all. His followers included Monimus, Onesicritus, Crates and Hipparchia, Menippus and Menedemus. The Cyrenaics, founded by Aristippus, made present pleasure the end. Only feelings are known, pleasant is good, harsh ends in grief, mean in nothing. The past brings regret, the future misgiving, therefore only the now is desirable. The philosopher, free of envy, love, superstition, lives a continuous round of delight. Hegesias, Onesicritus, Theodorus, and Bion carry the hedonist note further. Plato's Academy, old, middle, new, drew from Socrates, Egypt, and Pythagoras, dividing philosophy into ethics, physics, and dialectic. The good was threefold in soul, body, and externals. The absolute is best named the one, prior even to being. Reality orders itself as unmoved mover, self-moved, and moved. Immortals partake of inseparable motion, mortals of motion imparted and dissoluble. Above both stands the unmoved that moves, divine permanence. Learning is reminiscence, geometry guides the gate. After Plato, the academics stayed in the academy. The peripatetics, under Aristotle, the mind of the school, went to the Lyceum. Aristotle's reach spanned all knowledge. His moral end was perfection through virtue, his contemplative end, union with the One. He divided philosophy into practical, ethics, politics, and theoretical, physics, logic, with metaphysics treating substance whose principle of motion and rest is in itself. The soul lives, feels, understands, nutritive, sensitive, intellective, rational, and irrational. Wisdom is science of first causes, God the first mover, immovable, indivisible, separate from sensibles. Platonism reasons a priori. Aristotelianism, a posteriori. His line included Theophrastus, Strato, Lyco, Aristo, Critolus, and Diodorus. Pyrrhonian skepticism held reasons always meet equal counter-reasons. Dogmatists claim to find. Academics deem truth incomprehensible. Skeptics persist in inquiry and suspend judgment. In opinions, quiet. In impulses, moderation. And disturbances, suspension. The Stoics, from Zeno through Cleanthes and Chrysippus to Epictetus and Marcus Aurelius, were pantheists. The world is God, reason is its seed, nature is God mixed through matter. All is body or incorporeal adjunct, soul eight-parted and dissoluble. Good and evil sustain each other, meekness governs passion. Epicurus refined hedonism. The highest pleasure is grave tranquility. Pains and joys of mind surpass those of body. Rest as well as motion yields pleasure. He accepted atomism and taught, sense never deceives, opinions follow sense and may be true or false. What sense attests is true, what sense contradicts is false. Eclecticism, gathering fragments from rival schools, gave Rome a layman's compound. Cicero, its emblem, broad but imprecise. Neo-Pythagoreanism at Alexandria, Apollonius and Maduritus, revived number and aesthetic ideal, bridging to Neoplatonism. Plotinus with Porphyry, Iamblichus, Julian, Plutarch, and Proclus made the last and loftiest pagan synthesis, preserving the unwritten doctrine and symbols and mysteries. Outer bodies of teaching are shells for inner verities reached by contemplation, material science of little account besides the soul's ascent. Patristic philosophy, ante and post-Nicene, first attacked paganism and exalted faith, then shaped Christian thought along Platonic lines. Man as divine exception and crown of creation. Augustinianism consummated Christian Platonism, exalting church infallibility. Gnosticism read Christianity by Greek, Egyptian, Persian lights. Manichaeism set good and evil in eternal contest. With Boethius ended the ancient Greek line. Scholasticism sought concord of theology and philosophy. Eclectics, mystics, rationalists, Arabian Aristotelians, rising to Albertus Magnus and Thomas Aquinas, whose Thomism, Aristotelian at core, made faith a projection of reason. Scotus countered with the primacy of will. Later, schoolmen decayed into verbalism, and Bacon's induction cleared the ground for science. Experiment, exact speech, matter as the field of inquiry. Modern currents, humanism, rationalism, political philosophy, empiricism, moralism, idealism, realism, phenomenalism, multiplied. Behaviorism and neorealism pressed further, the latter extinguishing idealism. Spinoza conceived God as absolutely self-existent substance known through attributes of thought and extension, with mind and body as modes. By reason, man rises from sense illusion to union with the divine essence, deity equated with the infinite whole. Leibniz answered with monads, innumerable immaterial units of force unfolding their innate activity. God, the primal monad, man, an awakened monad, lower natures half asleep. Kant rescued mind from matter. The understanding selects and orders sensations by categories. Time and space give the form of experience. Noumenal exceeds reason, yet morality requires free will, immorality, and God. In judgment, art and life unite phenomenon and noumenon. Fichte made the known the contents of consciousness. Reality reduces to the facts of mind. Schelling restored the absolute as infinite mind realized by intellectual intuition beyond subject and object. Time negative, space positive, existence the reciprocity of both, identity the ground of philosophy. Schelling's absolute unfolds by a threefold rhythm. First, reflection, the infinite seeking embodiment in the finite. Second, subsumption, the return of the absolute from entanglement to the infinite. Third, reason, the poise where both movements are reconciled. Hegel rejected Schelling's intuition for a system of pure logic, beginning with nothing and, by strict sequence, deriving all things. Logic is a quality of the absolute. God is an endless self-unfolding that never concludes. Thought has neither beginning nor end. Opposites generate and are identical. Their relations alone exist, producing new elements in ceaseless flow. Thus, theism's personal finalities are assailed. Immortality becomes the unending life of deity, not the fixity of souls. Herbart reacted toward realism. Phenomena deceive in the mass, truth inheres in elements. He distinguished thing, matter, mind, each birthing contradictions he sought to resolve. Matter, through filling space, reduces to infinitesimal energies occupying none. Schopenhauer made will the world's blind architect and intellect its lame rider. Mind commonly rationalizes the will's dictates, but genius subdues will to reason. Christianity's strength, he held, was its pessimism and conquest of desire. Like the Buddhists, he saw nirvana as will's quietus and judged life, a manifestation of the will to live, a misfortune best not propagated. Nietzsche proclaimed eternal recurrence and the will to power, breeding the superhuman by aristocratic culture, even at the cost of love and the many. To those who equate power with virtue and self-mastery, the ideal shines. To the shallow, it seems ruthless. Newer German currents include Freudian psychoanalysis and relativity, which unsettles mechanical absolutes. Descartes, co-founder of modern method with Bacon, rebuilt philosophy from inner observation. Accept only what is clear and distinct. Ideas so stamped are true. Kant's positivism made theology and metaphysics the mind's childhood, science its adult estate. Study laws, not ultimates. An immense materialism praising Newton rather than God. France added traditionalism and sociological school. The encyclopedist's grand classification, Voltairean skepticism and neocriticism. Bergson's creative evolution. An intuitional protest against sterile materialism. Beheld life striving against matter and hinted at mastery over death. Locke applied induction to mind, the tabula rasa written by experience and reflection. Deity known by inference. Hume pressed empiricism, Berkeley transmuted it into idealism. Ideas are the true objects, matter unprovable, yet perception's trust must stand or knowledge perishes. Associationists, Hartley, Hume, made the linkage of ideas basic psychology. Utilitarians, Bentham, Paley, J. and J. S. Mill, crowned the greatest good for the greatest number. Mill allowed higher knowing by intuition or reason. Darwin naturalized origins. Agnosticism declared ultimates unknowable. Neo-Hegelianism revived the dialectic. Spencer's positivism universalized evolution, life passing from homogeneity to heterogeneity toward equilibrium, then dissolution and reintegration. His famed aphorism named God, infinite intelligence, infinitely diversified. Italy's Bruno multiplied suns and worlds and died for it. Vico saw divine law working through human law. Gioberti's ontologism made God the only being and source of knowledge. Croce, a Hegelian idealist, replaced religion with ethics and aesthetics, denying personal immortality. Sensism, criticism, and revived Thomism completed the scene. America offered transcendentalism, Emerson's oversoul and compensation, and pragmatism, James' truths as expedients that work, with Dewey's instrumentalism rejecting ultimates and Santayana urging the life of reason behind both sense and tradition. The lineage of wisdom is Eastern. Greek thought drank at Hindu, Chaldean, and Egyptian fountains. Thales, Pythagoras, and Plato returned from sanctuaries with the lore of the mysteries. Philosophy emerged from religion's secret schools and parted from them only after their decline. The mysteries guarded a super-rational doctrine, conferring it only on those dead to ambition and vowed to service. Their secrecy explains our scant records. Initiates were bound under penalty, and in time the sources were hidden behind the names of public teachers. Symbolism is their tongue, and nature's, every form a sign of the divine energy that produced it. Symbols both reveal and conceal, to the wise illumination, to the unprepared opacity. Thus the seeker must look where the doctrine was first lodged, in symbols, rites, and allegories, not on pages open to the profane. The Orphic egg wreathed by the fiery serpent, figured cosmos encircled by spirit, and the philosopher's soul at the moment its shell is broken in initiation. Foreknowing the rise and fall of nations, the sages cast their science into stone and span, into myths, measures, and monuments that time could not wholly efface. Memnon's, Colossi, and Palenque's terraces still whisper of lost arts. Their wisdom waits until men relearn the universal speech. Symbolism. This book assumes that within ancient emblems and rites lies a complete secret doctrine of life, preserved by a few illumined minds since the beginning. They left formulas for those worthy to follow. But lest the arcanum be profaned, they veiled it. Whoever now recovers the keys may open a treasury of philosophic, scientific, and religious truth. The Ancient Mysteries and Secret Societies. When faced with problems of reason, the strong-minded remain composed, gathering facts until clarity appears. The weak are overwhelmed, needing to be led and instructed in simple terms. Humanity divides between the few capable of seeking truth and the many content to be guided. Thus, ancient doctrine was delivered in two forms: the inner, or esoteric, for the wise, the outer, or exoteric, for the multitude. To the uninitiated, natural forces were clothed in human form and worshipped as gods. To the philosophers, these deities were symbols of universal principles. Every city of the ancient world held public temples, and within them, hidden schools of philosophy known as the mysteries. Their initiates, tested by ordeals, were taught divine truths preserved through ages. Plato himself was criticized for revealing fragments of their wisdom. Each civilization possessed both a public religion and a secret faith reserved for the initiated few, many of which perished, though their symbols remain. The rites of modern Freemasonry echo the trials of these ancient initiations. the mysteries shaped the world's civilization. Under their veil were taught the unity of God, the immortality of the soul, and man's resurrection to eternal life. When corruption entered, divine magic fell into sorcery, and only remnants of the sacred science survived. Man, said Thomas Taylor, is naturally religious. From his beginning, he has worshipped forms as emblems of the unseen power. The pagan mysteries accused Christianity of lowering the standard of virtue, for while their cry was, "Let the pure approach," the Christian call invited the sinner. Yet early Christianity itself sprang from the same source, the moral ideals of the mysteries, and its earliest congregations met in the subterranean temples of Mithras. The ancient philosophers held that no man could live intelligently without knowledge of nature and her laws. The mysteries taught divine order in all things, urging patience, courage, truth, and purity of life as the highest offering to God. Sun worship, inherited from Atlantis, lay at the heart of the most ancient cults. The solar god, radiant and golden-haired, was slain by darkness and restored to life through sacred rites, symbolizing man's conquest of his lower nature and his regeneration through spiritual awakening. The mysteries were established to assist man in regaining his lost estate and awakening the divine within. As time passed, the secret orders changed their outer form from religious to political, from philosophical to fraternal, but their hidden wisdom endured. Even in remote tribes and savage lands, fragments of the ancient initiations are found. The Druidic mysteries of Britain and Gaul were among the noblest descendants of this primeval wisdom. The Druids, priests, philosophers, and healers were mediators between gods and men. Their order, divided into Ovids, bards, and Druids, studied astronomy, medicine, poetry, and law. The oak was their sacred tree. Mistletoe, cut with a golden sickle, their emblem of divine medicine. Clothed in white, they celebrated their rites beneath forest oaks or within stone circles like Stonehenge, aligned to the heavens. The archdruid, crowned with oak leaves and bearing a golden scepter, wore the breastplate of judgment that strangled falsehood. He lit the altar fires with a crystal lens, drawing the fire of the sun. Candidates for initiation passed through long trials, vows of secrecy, and symbolic death and resurrection. They were instructed in the creation of the world, the gods, the stars, medicine, and the hidden powers of nature. The Druids taught the immortality of the soul, transmigration and purification through successive lives. All men, they said, would be saved, but some must return to master the lessons of earth. Their festivals honored the new and full moons, the solstices and the equinoxes. The birth of the sun god was celebrated at the winter solstice. The Druidic Madonna with her child, the resurrection of the sun god, and the sacred cross and serpent show their kinship with Egypt and Greece. Their temples were circular or serpent-shaped, dedicated to Hu, the mighty sun, and Ceridwen, the great mother. The candidate's final ordeal was burial in a coffin and a perilous voyage in an open boat. The death and rebirth of the initiate. Those who survived were said to be born again and became the leaders of their people. From the same eastern source came the mysteries of Mithras, carried by the Persian legions to Rome and throughout Europe. Mithras, lord of the sun, stood between Ormuzd, spirit of light, and Ahriman, spirit of darkness, as mediator and redeemer. The struggle of good and evil in the cosmos and in man's soul was dramatized in his rites. Performed in caves adorned with zodiacal signs, the initiations mirrored the soul's descent and ascent through the gates of Cancer and Capricorn. The Mithraic system bore close resemblance to Christianity. The virgin birth of the sun god, his sacrifice, death, resurrection, and redemption of mankind, baptism, communion, and the celebration of his birth at the winter solstice. The initiates, called lions, were marked with the cross upon their brows. Through purification, trial, and illumination, they rose from darkness to light, from death to spiritual life. Thus, through the mysteries, Egyptian, Druidic, Persian, and all the rest, the same secret doctrine flowed, that man, through discipline, knowledge, and virtue, may overcome matter, awaken the god within, and return, purified and conscious to the source from which he came. Mithraism, though below Zarathustra's philosophic height, swept much of Europe and left deep impress on Western institutions. Its symbols echoed in later fraternities, the lion and the grip of the lion's paw, a seven-rung ladder, likely from a seven-step pyramid, and the boys-only initiation while women were excluded. Its legends are solar allegory, Mithras rising from the rock as the sun at the vernal equinox. The Taroctony shows the sun god releasing nature's life from Taurus as Scorpio, the serpent, opposes. Dogs signify fidelity, the serpent marks Ahriman. Some, like O'Neill, deny Mithras as a mere sun god. Yet the cave birth, zodiacal rites, and claims of crucifixion and third-day rising kept the solar pattern, and fed parallels later read into Christianity. Gnosticism, its records largely destroyed, claimed the hidden Christian doctrine taught in symbols to initiates. Early legend makes Simon Magus the fountainhead. From the ineffable silence sprang two shoots, great mind, male, and great thought, female, whose union generated the middle realm, Pleroma, from which emanations and the demiurges fashioned the lower worlds. Syrian and Alexandrian streams differed in tone, but both used the emanation to bridge absolute spirit and substance. Basilides blended Hermetic, Oriental, Chaldean, and Persian lore. He named the 365 powers Abraxas, numerically 365, as Mithras, also totals, and traced chains of nous, logos, intelligence, sophia, power. Some Gnostics vilified the Demiurgus, even equating him with Jehovah. Others made him a faithful craftsman under the hidden god. Christ, to them, was nous descending upon Jesus at baptism and withdrawing before the Passion. Simon of Cyrene, they said, suffered in his stead. Valentinus multiplied syzygies, 15 pairs, exalted Sophia, and elaborated aeonic dramas preserved in parts of the Pistis Sophia. Though the Church anathematized them, many Gnostic lines, emanationist, symbolic, cosmological, bled into later Christian doctrine. Serapis, Azar Happy, veils a Greco-Egyptian mystery. Sun, world soul, or Osiris Apis compounded. His very name read as seven-lettered and hymned with the seven vowels. Legends tie his colossal image to a dream of Ptolemy Soter and a stolen idol from Sinope, recognized by initiates as Serapis and equated with Pluto, a political bridge between Greece and Egypt. His statues, often Grecian in style, present a pensive, androgynous majesty, coiled with the cosmic serpent, crowned with rays. Materials range from composite alloys to the famed Emerald Colossus. In the greater mysteries, beyond Isis's lesser, crypts, machines, and labyrinths tried candidates before an epiphany of the god. The maze signified the world's bewilderments and the bull-headed lower man who besets the soul. Serapis's cult braided into early Christianity. Hadrian even remarked on shared worship, and his grave, noble head likely seated the conventional visage of the Savior. His ascendancy waned under Theodosius. The Serapium fell, the image was shattered, and with the sack perished treasures of pagan wisdom. Yet the symbols and much of the doctrine they veiled passed on under other names. Christians raised the Serapeum of Alexandria and beneath its foundations reportedly found the monogram of Christ, an emblem long hidden under a pagan shrine. Serapis himself is shown ruling time and flood, standing on a sacred crocodile, gauging the Nile with a rule and balancing a triple-headed creature, lion, present, wolf, past, dog, future. Coiled by a serpent, often with Cerberus or grain baskets like Jupiter. Ancient authorities equated Serapis Isis with the great gods of Samothrace, and the sun under many names, Mithras in Persia, Attis in Phrygia, Amon in Libya, Adonis in Byblos, one light in many rites. The Odinic mysteries, cast in the north but patterned after Greek, Persian, and Brahmic models, were attributed to a culture hero who took the name Odin, founded the College of 12 Draugrs and instituted rites dramatizing Baldur's death and restoration. Myth became ritual. From Ymir's sundered body, the worlds were formed. Asgard crowned the mountain, Valhalla received the brave. Initiation moved through 9 caverns mirroring 9 worlds. Asgard, Alfheim, Niflheim, Jotunheim, Midgard, Vanaheim, Muspelheim, Svartalfheim, and Helheim. While the candidate, playing the hidden part of Baldur, sought to raise the beautiful from death, in a shield-roofed hall he swore upon a naked blade, drank sanctified mead from a skull bowl, faced ordeals, and unveiled Odin, wisdom. Given the ring, he was reborn, dead, and raised without passing the gates of death. Wagner's ring preserves the thunder of this cycle, though in operatic dress. Foremost among ancient initiations were the Eleusinian Mysteries, venerating Ceres, Demeter, and Persephone. Their fame sprang from moral beauty and luminous doctrine. Their rites spread from Attica to Rome and Britain and through Platonism to later ages. The Lesser Mysteries at Agrae in spring used Persephone's abduction by Pluto to veil the descent of Psyche into matter, the body as sepulcher, nature's mirror as fatal lure. The dead are those ruled by the senseless personality. Candidates vowed to silence upon sacrificial skins learned that the unpurified soul carries its cravings beyond the tomb, suffering the Dantean logic of its own desires. That midnight thins the veil and draws souls into birth. That suicide bears a hidden woe not to be named. Passing the subterranean trials, the neophyte became a mystes, one brought to the veil, seeing dimly. The greater mysteries at Eleusis in autumn elevated Ceres' quest for her lost child with the 2 torches of intuition and reason. Persephone, having tasted the pomegranate, halves her year. Winter beneath with Pluto, summer above, an image of the soul's daily descent in waking and ascent in sleep, and of the initiate's trained intercession to free the psyche from Pluto's realm. Conx, ompax, sealed rites akin to Brahmanic practice. 9 ritual days echoed 9 prenatal spheres. The climax led from gloom to brilliance, from the gate of ignorance to the hall of unseen lamps. A radiant statue of Ceres, Hierophant, and ministers in splendid robes, and the final autopsy. Beholding. The initiate, now Apoptes, one who has seen, received ciphered books and stone tablets. Officiants embodied the cosmos. Hierophant as demiurgus, torchbearer as sun, altar man as moon, herald as Hermes, others as the lesser stars. Testimonies speak of living gods, whether through ecstasy or supernal aid. Women and children were admitted, yet higher teachings passed on to a few of superior grasp. Socrates himself declined formal initiation, lest oaths seal a tongue that already knew. Initiates kept their garments for years as emblems of inner vesture. First the animal skin, then the consecrated robe. Virtue and wisdom as the soul's true clothing. Porphyry summarized their language of light, transparent stones and gold for the divine, spheres and circles for eternity, obelisks for the igneous principle, human beauty for the source of beauty itself. Thus the mysteries preserved in drama and symbol one philosophic flame, the soul's descent, bondage, purification, and return to the source of light and truth. Porphyry's lexicon of forms makes matter speak. Cone for sun, cylinder for earth, phallus and triangle for generation, shorthand for powers Eleusis taught through symbol. In the Bacchic initiations, the candidate enacted Dionysos, assailed by titans, slain and restored, crowned with myrtle and ivy. Traditions cast Bacchus as an early Christ type, virgin born on December 25th. Wonder worker who turned water to wine, riding on an ass, slain by titans and rising March 25th, hailed Savior, shown as an infant at midwinter. Bacchus is also solar, his resurrection aided by Apollo. Philosophically, it is the soul's disentanglement from titanic matter, like smoke rising from consumed dross. Once lofty, the rites later decayed into orgia. Yet Eleusis endured longest, teaching how to live and die, until Theodosius stamped it out. Orpheus, more god than man to later Greeks, founded their sacred theology and moral law, distilling Egyptian psaltration and possibly Brahmanic wisdom into myth and music. His descent for erudites is the soul's recall from ignorance. His backward glance, theology's mistrust of the soul's own knowing. His dismemberment by frenzied women, sectarian strife tearing truth's body while its head, esoteric doctrine, still speaks. The seven-stringed lyre denotes seven keys of universal knowledge. The swan, his doctrine, reborn through initiates of every age. The Bacchic Dionysiac doctrine turns on a grand allegory. The rational world soul, Bacchus, lured by its reflection in the mirror of illusion, scattered by titans, zodiacal powers, and mired in matter, boiled, immersion in form, and roasted, spiritual ascent. Zeus's thunderbolt, death's disintegration, prevents the loss of the divine idea. From titanic ashes mixed with the god's flesh, mankind is formed, bearing both irrational fragments and Bacchic life. The saved heart of Bacchus is the immortal center in ether. The mysteries gather the scattered members, reintegrating the soul from separateness to unity, until Bacchus rises whole. Dionysos is the solar aspect of this same mystery, statues born in Eleusis's lesser degree. From this current flowed the Dionysiac architects, an ancient fraternity of builders who married earthly and divine architectonics, marked their stones, kept a secret tongue, and raised monuments across the ancient world. Later legend places them at Solomon's temple and counts see Hiram Abiff among their initiates. An early echo of the speculative craft that would inherit much of their language, aim, and light. Thank you for listening to this sample. To continue listening to this book and for access to all of our other full audiobooks, please subscribe for $7.77 per month. Go to adultbrain.ca or follow the link in the show notes. This will be a completely separate podcast with a new RSS feed and will have all the titles from this feed as well. Thank you for your help and support in bringing rare and forgotten books to audio for the world.